This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. This is Pete Caliendo, your host. We just got back from Cuba, Havana, Cuba, with Coach Percy. You heard the last interview. We got back into the States, and now we are at the American Baseball Coaches Convention. It is the largest baseball coaches convention in the world, the best one. There are speakers from all over the world here. They are outstanding, and we're going to start the podcast here because we're going to have several interviews with top coaches, and we're going to just take a few minutes with each coach, and we're going to ask them what they think about their coaching philosophy, you know, how to work with kids, especially nowadays, some of the kids that are being brought up, you know, what's the best way to motivate them, what's the best way to teach. So we'll just start some tips, and then each individual that's going to be on the show, we will also have on later on as a full-time guest. But we want to kind of give you a taste here at the American Baseball Coaches Association. Again, this is Pete Caliendo, host of Baseball Outside the Box. This is the podcast where we interview coaches from all over the world who love the challenge of status quo and have some very innovative thoughts into the coaching development. And we're going to start off with a very good friend of mine, Bill Olson. Now, you got to understand, Bill Olson has been around a long time. He's been coaching high school baseball for over 40 years, but more importantly, he was a former national team coach. He's done a lot with USA Baseball. He's a Hall of Famer with the American Baseball Coaches Association. I can keep going on, but we're not going to because I want you to hear them. And when you hear them, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. So first of all, I just want to thank Coach Olson. We were together with the 14-year-old team in Mexico in the Pan Am Games with Team USA. You know, I was a youngster, and I got a chance to learn a lot from Coach Olson along with Coach Landolfi, who hopefully will be on the show later on. But first of all, I just want to say, you know, thank Bill for being on the show, and then we'll get into a little bit, a few questions about coaching. Bill, great to have you. Great to see you as always every year at the ABCA.
Pete, it's great to be here. People like you make this game very interesting and fun to be with. The clientele that we develop through our baseball is fantastic, and I appreciate being part of this.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know you've coached some guys, you know, a lot of guys have been to the big leagues, and obviously your son, a former big league player, closer, one of the top closers in the game. You had him since he was young. Just for our audience, so you know, Coach Olson has spoken all over the country. He's also been around the world. So one of the top clinicians, well recognized, especially in the United States. Let's do this. It'd be a great idea to start with Greg a little bit. Because, you know, you coach Greg, and maybe give the audience around the world an idea of, you know, how did you handle Greg when he was younger? And I know you're not going to say that you were part of his development, but you were, obviously, somehow. But what do you think were the attributes that allowed him to be the ball player he is? Of course, you got to have some talent also. But what did you do when he was younger to make sure he was going on the right track?
Basically, you know, having the chance to practice with him when we could, but giving him the role model to play against, giving the examples that we do, we work together and keep things positive all the time, set your standards high. I know you're better than this, I know you're better than this, and what you can do here, set your standards high, set your goals high. I'll never forget, we had the All-State team, and one mother criticized me because Greg made the All-State team and her son didn't. I said, and that's the committee. I didn't even vote for Greg because I didn't want people going back and haunting me because my son made the All-State team, you know. But he was a great player. He worked very hard, very coachable, you know, a typical player for us. And exactly, he was a good role model for us.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's another one. What happens, what about when, I'm sure Greg had some days where he had some bad days. Yeah. Everybody has them. All young kids have them. How did you deal with that part after the ball game on a ride home? Or, you know, especially for our dads and moms who are, you know, have kids and they may not have a good day. How did you deal with your own son?
I try to accentuate the positives. You know, too often I see people get in the car after a ball game, little kids, little leaguers, and first thing I see is mom and dad turn their head in the back seat and start nibbling on the poor kid. I feel so sorry for him. So I tell my players, I said, do me a favor. When they start saying something, she said, I did the best I could, Dad. I did the best I could, Mom. Look them in the eye and say that, and if you can say that and walk away with it, then they should keep their mouth shut because that's the example I want. I did the best I could. You're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Baseball is a game of failure. You're going to fail 7 out of 10 times in your bat, you know? Mm-hmm. Same thing here. We got to accentuate the positives, eliminate the negatives. Things are going to work out well.
Now, you've had a lot of players, a lot of teams, whether it be your high school teams, Team USA, teams from all over. What were some of the things that, and I know it's a full-time show, the topic would be a full show. We'll do that later because we'd love to have you on for a full hour. But give our coaches around the world an idea of some of the areas that you focused on with your teams when it came to preparing them.
I think the biggest thing that we had, our kids bonded very well. All of us, my first team back in the 60s, the kids bonded together. We had, 12, 13 players, and it weren't cliques here. It was a bunch of guys that bonded together. So when one guy did something, the whole bunch did. We tried to, again, do the positive stuff. Obviously, the tobacco and alcohol stuff has got to be nipped in the bud and being late. But I think being a coach, we have to be the role model. We've got to be the leader. If we're going to be late, we're going to smoke and drink. What do we expect from our players? We've got to be the role model. Set the example all the time. Be the first one to be, hey, you're positive. That was a good play you made out there. That was a great play out there. And boom, boom, boom. Accentuate positives.
That is excellent. And what about in your practices? How did you run your practices that made your teams successful?
That's the best thing, Pete. The best thing we had, if we had a bad ball game, things didn't go right, and I'd say, all right, guys, my bad, my fault. We didn't work on that enough. We're going to have practice the next morning. So we spent times when things that didn't go bad, I took the blame. We didn't take enough time on practice. We didn't cut on that well enough. That's my job, and we're going to work on it in practice. So they knew, oh, boy, come tomorrow morning, we're going to be doing this in the first and thirds or wherever it's going to be. We're going to work our tail off because Coach Olson said we didn't do it well enough, and we're going to get it done. So I took the blame, first of all.
And finally, the facets of the game, there's many of them. Where did you start? What did you think were the most important parts of the game? Defense, offense, pitching, and which ones did you emphasize first? As we just listened to Augie Garrido in the audience, and excuse me, speaking to over 6,000 coaches about this. Where did you start?
Oh, just what he hit so well on the bunting game, man. Oh, Pete, we ran that bunt. We ran the bunt. Oh, my fourth place hitter would bunt. My first place hitter would bunt. We had the bunt. If they didn't get it done, we played hours and hours practicing the bunt. If they didn't get it done, they ran laps. That's how important that bunt was to us. And we worked the heck out of that thing. We worked the heck out of delayed steals and small pieces, and then obviously cutoffs and relays and all the small pieces of the game that Augie just got done saying, it's three people, but one guy could be out of position. They're just like the bunt. It's got to be down. Here's how we work on the thing. So we put a lot of time on that thing. So they knew in the game. I think the best, I had a guy tell me one time, I knew when your squeeze players were on. I said, why is that? Because your dugout's quiet. They don't say a word. So, I said, well, okay, I didn't, kind of being having fun with that thing. But we worked our tail. And Augie said the same thing, the small game. Guys won't do enough of that anymore. They just play straight baseball. Bunt them over. Get in the next place.
And how much defense did you focus on?
Tons, over half.
Half of your practices?
Yes. Oh, yeah, at least half. Maybe more than that. We worked tons on our pitches and catches working together. We worked tons on first and third defenses and cutoffs and relays. Yeah, we hit. We spent a lot of time hitting. But, kids love to hit. We might hit in the morning and then take defense in the afternoon and stuff like that.
But as Augie said, if you're working on defense, if they score no runs, all you need is one.
I love what he said because that's an example of what we try to do the best we can. That's why he's such a great coach. He's a role model. I'm glad to hear that stuff.
Absolutely. Folks, you heard it here from Bill Olson, Hall of Famer, American Baseball Coaches Association, Team USA coach, one of the greatest coaches in the country. There's no doubt about it. One of the best speakers. This later on, this is going to be an hour show, so that way you'll show up, you'll listen to the show because you can imagine this was just 6-7 minutes and we got a ton out of this. So, Bill, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Pete. I love it. Guys, love the game. Peace of game. Have fun with it.
All right, folks, we'll be back with Baseball Outside the Box. Your host, Pete Caliendo. We will have another guest for you from the American Baseball Coaches Association. All right, folks, we are back at the ABCA convention. We've been walking around meeting a lot of friends, and it's great because you just, every two steps, you can meet somebody that's been in the game. And right now, I just met my great friend for over 30 years, an American out of Miami, grew up in Miami area. Bill Holmberg, he was the former national team coach in the World Baseball Classic, the pitching coach, did an outstanding job. He also been with a lot of national teams in Italy and now is in game development for Europe with Major League Baseball. What a great job he has. He's done an outstanding job. He speaks all over the world, and I just want to welcome Bill because he's been a great friend for a lot of years.
Thank you, Pete. It's very, very happy to be able to talk to you and see you here at the convention. It's been a pleasure, like always.
Yeah, I know. Every time we meet, we're always talking about something. But right now, what we're doing, and the audience knows, our fans all over the world, they know that we're doing the interview. It's kind of a prelude to an hour interview later on. But one of the topics that we want to talk about, something that you've been involved in heavily, especially in Europe, and that's the academies that you guys have done for Major League Baseball. Tell us a little bit about the academy and What's the purpose behind it, and what have you seen some of the results of, you know, some of the players that have gone through the academy? Why would that be good for other countries, you know, other communities, or any coach out there that may be able to help them too?
Well, we started the Italian Academy 13 years ago, and it's been a huge success. We've had over 22 guys signed, and around Europe now we are instituting camps for 12 to 15-year-old players. We're trying to get them a little bit younger to improve their skills and improve their mechanics and technique.
All right, now I'm going to hit you with this because you said 12-year-olds, you know, start them young. Give me some ideas on what some of the things that we should be doing with young kids that maybe we don't do around the world and even in the U.S. That we don't do with them that's important that we begin educating them at that age.
Well, the thing that's closest to my heart is really the throwing mechanic, okay, the arm action. Obviously, for me, being a pitching coach is fundamental in what I'm trying to accomplish, especially if I want to develop pitchers eventually. So I think what we're not doing right now is we're not teaching kids how to throw at a young age correctly. We're just giving them the ball and telling them to throw right off the bat, and I don't think we're doing them justice by allowing them to understand the proper throwing mechanic.
And obviously, if they can't throw and catch, it's going to be real hard to play the game. So give our audience, especially coaches, there's a lot of young coaches out there too, give them an idea when you're talking about mechanics of just throwing, maybe not pitching yet, because I'm assuming they got to throw good before they can even get to pitching. So give them an idea of what some of the things you might work on.
Well, my most the most fundamental part of what I teach is the arm action. You want to get a nice arm swing, get up to a good launch position. Okay, make sure we're balanced, keep our posture. A lot of the things that we've seen here at the ABCA, most of the coaches have talked about posture and stabilization, mm-hmm. and other things that are important in throwing. But to have the proper arm action is probably the most important factor for me in throwing the baseball healthily.
Now, here's the thing. At the academies, you've got them there for quite a time, and you know, maybe 2-3 days a week or maybe every day. Some of the things that you work on to help kids stabilize themselves, because we talk about balance a lot. What are some of the things that you guys do at the academy to help kids control their bodies?
Well, you know, obviously the strength and conditioning guys are a huge part of what we do, and a lot of it is agility and basically just working on balance itself. Okay, but our thing more is we work a lot with wrong foot throws, which we feel to be extremely helpful in teaching kids the proper arm action to be able to throw the ball correctly, okay, without hopefully injuring themselves in the future.
Explain a little bit about the wrong throw, just so our audience is a little clear on that.
Well, instead of striding as a right-handed thrower with your left foot, you would be striding with your right foot. So you're taking basically the whole front side out, and you're just working on the correct arm action, arm swing, pendulum swing up to launch position to be able to apply force to the ball straight to your target.
Okay, now when kids are young, and let's say we've covered some of the throwing, we're working with them a little bit, and you know, you see a lot of times they're always teaching kids to throw from one angle, you know, and I understand that, but in baseball you throw from many angles. Is it good to get young kids to kind of throw from different angles so they're working on their athleticism and different positions?
Undoubtedly, but the key to that is remembering that the thing, what changes angle, arm angle, is basically shoulder angle. So if we can just have them understand to throw properly from a standing position with a wrong foot throw and having their arm in the proper position, the angles will change as they change your shoulder angles.
All right, now you guys had the academy. Is it all year round? Do you give these guys a break? What have been results of the academy, and why do you feel that, you know, you've gotten those results where these kids have signed or gone on to, you know, college or better things?
Basically, it's a 9-month program. We work 6 days a week. They go to school in the morning, afternoon we practice. Our success has been really, the kids have brought success to themselves. You know, we've had some great kids, hard workers, and all we try to do is steer them in the right direction. But we are very, very adamant on making sure that the arm action is proper for all positions, not just pitchers.
Bill, lastly, what do you do, you know, you say 9 months, what do you tell them to do the next 3 months? Hopefully not eat a lot of pasta.
Well, they probably are eating a lot of pasta being in Italy, but they do, you know, they do play for their club teams. So we go from training right into them playing games, and that's basically their whole year.
And if you base the training and playing games, like percentage-wise, what's the percentage in the academies of playing games versus the practice?
Well, you know, we sort of follow the LTDA mm-hmm. model, the Canadian model. Yep. That's what we started out. Now I know that USA Baseball has one also.
Right.
We try to just follow those numbers by 70-30. Sure. In other words, 70% practice, mm-hmm. 30% games. As we go forward, then we start to develop and turn the number over to be 30% practice, 70% games as they get older.
Fantastic. Coaches around the world, you heard it right here from Bill Holmberg, former national team coach in the World Baseball Classic, pitching coach with the Italian national team, and also currently the European Major League Baseball development program here. He heads that up. You heard it that, you know, you got to practice a lot, and that's very important, and then you can get into your games. But there's a lot of teams out there that sometimes reverse it, and they play too many games and aren't practiced enough. I think you've heard most of our coaches stress where young kids need to practice. So hopefully you're doing that. We got a little bit from Bill Holmberg right now, but we're going to get a full hour from it. So first of all, Bill, thanks for taking your time out here at ABC. I know you got to catch a flight to Florida and then to Italy.
Thank you, Pete. It's been a pleasure, like always. Good seeing you.
All right, we will be right back with former national team coach, 18U gold medal coach, Don Freeman. So stay tuned, hang on, and we'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Yes, we are still here at the American Baseball Coach Association. Well, if you have never been here, it's unbelievable. Over 6,000, 7,000 coaches, over 300, 400 exhibitors, I think. I mean, there's so many people here. There's so much to learn. You know what? 3.5 days just isn't enough. This thing should be a week convention because you just can't see everything and listen to every speaker. But the good thing is the ABCA, if you're a member and you attend the convention, you get the videotapes online so you can go review the speakers that you have not seen. All right, now, as we promised you, we are with another great friend. I consider some of these guys, most of these guys that you listen to on the podcast, these guys are mentors. These guys are guys that I've been around who I've learned a lot from, and I really owe a lot to. So I really appreciate they're going to be on the show. And I told you, Don Freeman, former national team coach, gold medal national team coach with USA Baseball's 18U. I happened to see Don in Taiwan when he won the gold. It was an unbelievable experience. It was 2003. Now, I tell you, gold medal coach, but he's been in baseball a long time. He's traveled all over the world. He was also with the German national team. He was also with the German club. He'll tell you about it when we get on. But right now, I just want to thank and welcome Don Freeman.
Thanks, Pete. I'm glad to be able to hook up with you while we're here at the convention. There's only 6,000 guys here. It's amazing we see each other.
Yeah, if it wasn't for technology and texting, we wouldn't be able to find where we're at. You know, meet me here, meet me there. Yeah. So without texting, we wouldn't be able to do it. But here's another thing I love about Don Freeman. Every time you're at a convention, you always see Don Freeman in every session, listening to the speakers and in the front a lot of times. And tell me, I know you've been coaching probably over 35, 40 years. Tell me what you believe has made you what I believe is a successful coach and been successful with your players?
Well, I think as you get involved in the coaching area, you realize you don't know what you don't know until you get out on the field and you have to discover it. Most young coaches get started and they think they have a handle on it. And as they progress, they realize that there's so much to learn. I love coming to clinics. I love being able to go speak at clinics because I get to listen to a lot of other people. I attend these clinics and I think I was a better student when I sat in the front two or three rows than I was in the back row because you get distracted. And these guys have so much to say up there. And I want to make sure I don't miss anything. And you mentioned about the videos that are available now online for the people that attend. It takes the pressure off. You don't have to sit there and write feverishly what everything they're saying. You listen, make a couple notes, but you can go home and you can go through the video several times and glean all the information off. So when you go back on the field, you can help your players much more.
Now I know. Now I realize what one of my mistakes was. I was always one of those guys that sat in the back. You know, and that makes sense because you tend to listen less sometimes when you're in the back. Now I know why you're in the front. Now, when it comes to coaching, you know, I know education is important and learning, but what do you believe for a lot of young coaches out there to be a successful individual when in the coaching industry? What do you think the attributes are of a good coach?
Well, I think the first thing we have to look at is our our age difference between us and the athletes is quite a bit, and our mind maturation level is much different. We have a tendency to coach like, teach like an adult would be teaching to an adult, and the kids can't process that information. They don't have the constant slow buildup of background that we have, and we get frustrated when they can't pick up something. We got to remember that every day practice has got to be fun. If the kids are having fun, they're more attentive. And if you're having fun, you have more patience. And I think that's one of the first things that young coaches have to learn. You got to make it fun because you want the kids to want to return to practice. We don't want to chase them away from our game. We want to draw them. And if they're having fun, they're telling some buddies they're having fun and they're bringing them with them. So I think that's a big piece.
You know, it's interesting because when every person we've had so far at the convention that we brought onto the show, we've just kind of, folks, you know, coaches, and the Baseball Outside the Box doesn't have a script. You know, we ad-lib everything. We go off of what the speaker or what the interviewer is talking about, and we try to think of another question that might help our coaches anywhere in the world. What's interesting, every time I brought up the topic of what are some of the attributes of a good coach, immediately almost everybody went to practice, you know, and the importance of how practice is. Now, when you practiced, What did you do? And I know this is a short show because we're going to do an hour show with Don Freeman, so this is kind of prelude to what we're going to talk about. What did you do when things weren't going well in that practice? How did you make the adjustment? Why did you make the adjustment?
Well, I learned a long time ago from people much smarter than I was. When things aren't going well in practice, you're trying to get something across to them. The coach seems to get frustrated because they're not picking it up, and the kids get frustrated because they can't figure out what they're doing, and they lose focus. I have found that through experience that when you're trying to present something, you're trying to go through it, and you spend 10, 15, 20 minutes, and you're not getting anywhere on, and you're getting frustrated, go away from it. Go to some other parts of the game, and then maybe you come back for 10 more minutes at the end of the practice that day and finish up and just try to review, okay, this is what we're doing, let's try to get back on track, and then come back again tomorrow. Short spurts is much easier with kids than long spurts. Adults can't sit very long and focus.
Yeah, I know
we
that.
Can't expect the kids to.
Yep.
So we just got to be patient. Becoming a good baseball player is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Little bits and pieces every day adding up create skill. And we have to keep that in mind. We can't expect results immediately.
What a great way to put that. Now, if we had to look at practice and you had to pick two, three things or one thing that you felt was so important that has to be done in your practice so that way it translates into the game situations, what would be that area that you would pick?
Oh, boy. I'd emphasize a tremendous amount on the throwing aspect and catching aspect. The kids love to hit. All players, no matter how age, they love to hit. And that's the fun part. So they're going to have fun regardless. But we need to be able to throw and catch and get outs. So all of our drills, I think, need to be focused in that area. Because if you don't give up many runs, you don't have to score many runs. And it makes the game easier to play. And they have fun.
Well, you can see now, folks, from around the world, you can see why we attend the American Baseball Coach Association. Some of the best coaches in the world are here. You can hear some noise behind me right now. A lot of the coaches are exiting from the last speaker, but there will be four more speakers here on Sunday. You know, if you just walk around here, if you just spend 5 minutes for every coach and you pick their brains, think about all the coaches and all the things that you learn. So last thing, Donnie, when you're here at the convention, what are some of your goals, you know, as you walk around the convention, and why do you try to do certain things?
Well, my number one goal is catch up with all the great friends that we make in this sport, and we make so many of them. But my number two goal is I want to meet about 10 or 12 more people that I didn't know before and get to know them so we can start a relationship and we can share information over the telephone, the computer, or whatever. But it just makes it a better and easier way to improve.
All right, Don, it was a pleasure. Thanks for being on the show, Baseball Outside the Box, man.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
All right, travel safe. This is Pete Caliendo with Baseball Outside the Box. Keep in mind, it's a global game. You can learn from anybody around the world, and we've got a lot of international coaches here at the convention, and we've had a special meeting with international coaches. We've, you know, mixed ideas. We talked about different ideas. There are not just coaches in the U.S. that know this game, but there are coaches globally. So remember, learn from the best. We've been all over here. There's coaches from all over the world. We've been to the exhibits. We've been to the honors luncheon right now here in Indiana. It's a great convention hall, and I'm back to interview another coach, a 35-year member of the ABCA, a good friend. We meet many times for breakfast just to talk about baseball and share ideas. Played at the University of Arizona, coached also with the Jerry Kendall, who recently passed away, one of the greatest coaches in the world. And with me is Bobby Rowan. Just want to welcome Bobby to the show.
Thanks, Pete. Glad to be here and at the convention.
Yeah, I bet. And then what's nice is both of us are going to go up there and get a 35-year award for being. I mean, I don't know what that means. I think it's we're getting old.
Well, yeah, the good thing is we're getting an award. The bad thing is 35 years, Pete.
Hey, listen, you've been with a lot of great coaches. You've been coaching, obviously, a long time. Give us, this is a short interview because we've told our audience we're interviewing different guys at the convention for 4 or 5 minutes just to kind of give them a little basic idea of some of the great coaches that are here. But give our audience around the world an idea when it comes to coaching. What are some of the attributes that great coaches have and why they have some great teams?
Well, the biggest thing I can tell you, Pete, is that the coaches I've been involved with, and like Jerry Kendall, for instance, he was very organized. And one of the things that the travel coaches can do in coaching youth baseball is to take a page off those guys and make sure that your practices are organized. One thing that Jerry Kendall did every day is that he had the practice plan posted in our clubhouse locker room by 12 noon. And that way, every player that came down would be able to look at that list of everything they would have to do that day, and then they would be prepared throughout the rest of the day mentally of what's going to happen. So imagine that you're going to look and you're going to say, I'm going to do this infield drill, I'm going to do this hitting drill, I'm going to do this type of running conditioning. So they're actually doing it in their brain. So when they got to the ballpark that day, they were prepared, ready to do it. You get a lot of coaches that I talk to, and one of my biggest thing, piece of that, as you know, is I want to train coaches that they'll come to practice and they have no idea what they're going to do. They meet with the coaches 4 or 5 minutes. Oh, you guys go run past that tree over there and come back. Well, that tree's a mile away, and these guys are going to try and organize a practice. By the time the kids get back, these kids are smart. Nowadays, they're going to pick into that, and they're going to realize they're not organized, and they're going to lose interest. And I tell coaches this: it's as simple as this, you guys. Put together a practice plan. Put it on and do it as an email. Send it out to all the parents. So now the parents are going like, wow, this is pretty cool. Because let's face it, you got to get those parents happy, and then all those kids can get that. It's simple. It's simple as that. So they know exactly what's going to happen, what exactly they're going to do. So when the kids get there, it's just like a piece of work. I mean, I've learned from football coaches when they used to have practices. They used to have their summer training at Cochise College, where I was for 3 years. The University of Arizona would come down. It was every 15 minutes, the home run bull, and they would switch. And I got mine from that. I thought that was amazing how they would all move to something else. So I think the biggest thing right now is to be organized when you're doing your practices.
And since you brought up practice, practice and practice planning, when you're practicing, what now is the next step when implementing your practice plan? How do you get them to actually accomplish something that they're going to do in a game?
The thing is that what a lot of coaches are doing, and I got this from Augie Garrido. Augie said this. He said that in games at the University of Texas, we will not strive to be perfect in games. In practice, absolutely. So he would put a competition edge in all of his drills. So these kids would have that little bit of, not so much stress, but a little bit of that feeling that this isn't just a ground ball coming at me. If I blow this ground ball, I'm going to be off the field or something like that. So put that competition edge in the game, and then it's going to be hopefully transferred transferred to the game.
That's outstanding. And one last thing, because this is great stuff, and this gives our audience an understanding. You and I are going to do a full hour interview, and we're going to talk about practice planning and a lot of other things, but it gives our audience a great idea. Tell our coaches around the world, when a player in practice isn't doing the things that maybe they should be doing 100%, how do you deal with that situation?
Well, you know what? A lot of times what we find out is that it's not so much the physical skills, because we find through science that once a body learns how to do something, it can repeat it every single time. But from the neck up, they're not prepared. Okay, they're not thinking. So I think what you have to do is, as a coach, you can't just look at him and see the ground ball go through his legs and say, well, he just can't feel the ground ball. Let's work from the neck up. Let's first of all see how he's thinking, where he's going at. And then, of course, the biggest thing, and I get this from parents all the time, Pete, is the confidence. You got to give a kid confidence. If he has no confidence in this game, he's going to fail, whether you're hitting, whether you're fielding.
Well, you know what? It brings one more I got for you. In the old days, there was a lot of yelling. You'd have more yelling at practice. It's times are changing. So now how are you dealing with today's player?
Well, absolutely. I mean, today's player, what happens is that when the coach starts yelling and screaming at them, it goes right over the top of their heads, okay? It's like music in an elevator. What you have to do is not really when you tell a kid to do a drill, okay, and you say, hey, this is how you do it, and you expect the kid to do it. And today's kid needs an explanation of why you're doing it. Okay, you got to use the top hand when you hit. You got to snap that bat because that's the director's hand. That's the speed hand. You get that extension through that top hand instead of saying swing fast or whatever. You got to break things down because I'll tell you what, these kids are going online and they're seeing how good we are. They're going like, well, let's see if Bobby Rowan's really right. Oh my gosh, he is. Okay, so I trust him. And now the parents trust him. I think that's what we have to do, Pete.
Folks, great stuff from Bobby Rowan, University of Arizona, and also 35-year member of the American Baseball Coaches Association. We're going to be right back at the ABCA with our next guest, folks. So we'll wait 1 minute, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back on Baseball Outside the Box. We're still here, believe it or not, at the American Baseball Coaches Convention. This thing just keeps going on. We just don't have enough days to cover everything. But as we're walking around, we run into another great development person. And as I told you earlier, we're talking about baseball development around the world. This is not only a USA game anymore. This is a development all over the world. There's some great ideas coming out from a lot of countries, especially in athletic development. So right now, I am with Dirk Fries from the German National Federation, where he is the director of national teams. And Dirk, first of all, I know you got a lot of things, and you know, you're here to talk to a lot of people, so thanks for stopping by and doing the interview with Baseball Outside the Box.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dirk, let's get into it. Let's talk about the German program. You know, the Germans have done a great job in Europe. I'm familiar because I've watched you guys for many years. Give me an idea why you think German baseball has progressed to the level that has progressed.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who care a lot about the game and have invested a lot of time over these last couple of years. And most of these people have realized that, you know, after they were done playing, that the only way to continue baseball, the growth in Germany, is going to by developing. And so you have to develop players. We're trying to develop coaches at the same time. And that's the only way to spread the game and make it more popular and raise the level of play.
And give us, our audience, an idea. When you say develop coaches, I think that hits a key thing for me. When you're developing coaches, what's the order, what's the foundation that you're working on to make sure that your coaches are being developed?
Well, you know, it's just we're only in first, second, maybe third generation of baseball in Germany. So the game hasn't been around all that long. So everybody that has played has their ideas, but we're trying to sum them up and note them down and just continue the book and grow it so that we give them as much information as we can, and kind of, because most of it is global, but it's in English. So for some of these coaches, especially for the younger teams, the younger kids, that we're trying to translate it and kind of, you know, get the absolute, get the core out of those ideas that we think are the best, and just kind of spread that in order to just develop a lot of coaches in all areas of the game and in all areas of Germany.
So you guys are taking a program, you're standardizing it, and coaches are following in some ways a lot of the things that you're doing. So whether it be the drills, whether it be terminology, you're trying to get them all on the same page?
We're just at the start of this.
Sure.
So, I mean, we've learned from a lot of American coaches coming over. We had the MLB Envoy program for a lot of years. We have coaches from other European countries coming over, and we just started intensifying the dialogue with all these other countries. So the exchange of knowledge in baseball is, I think, greater than in any other sport that I would know. And we're trying to use that, but also at the same time acknowledging that, you know, baseball is different in Europe, and especially in Germany, just because the system's different, people are different, culture's a little different, and trying to find our own way to develop players and play the game in Germany. And we're just, like I said, at the start of it, so it's a long way to go, but the idea is, yes, to have just general guidelines, drills, and theories that, of course, we're going to need to adapt all the time, but they kind of reflect what we think will help develop our players for the long run.
All right, now, here's the interesting thing. You've got the coaches, you've got your staff, you know, that you work together on. A couple things that you would like for your coaches to follow, you know, a couple things when it comes to coaching that you want to make sure that they're at least doing. You know, just pick two things that you think might be important to let our audience know.
To not get too technical, I think we're big on developing the person, That's something for me that, you know, you want to just get the right mindset and the right personality for players, that they're really striving to become the best, you know, or the best that they can be. And the second one for me would probably be that just not, what's the American term, it's probably not cookie cutting it.
Yes.
But yeah. Everybody's an individual,
yep.
And you got to find a way to help each kid and each person be the best that they can be, and not trying to, you know, like put on them what you think, what worked for you or what you have learned. So you got to be open-minded in order to get the best results, I believe.
Excellent. And last thing, and then we'll let you run. Hopefully, maybe one day we'll have you on the show for a full hour. Germany. When people think about Germany, okay, they think about discipline. They think about tough people. You know, that mentality, do your coaches have that kind of mentality in practice? Or is it a little bit more fun? Or is it a combination of both?
I mean, it really depends on the coach, but I do think that you can say Germans seem to be very, very organized, and I think that is reflected for most coaches in practice and the way they run their teams. But there's also a thing to be said about flexibility and trying to change and adapting. So it can be one or the other. And as you touched on, I mean, the most important thing is whether it's super organized or a little more lax, you got to make those kids have fun, and then they'll be coming back to the game and working hard at it.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, that was Dirk Freeze. Listen, Dirk, I want to thank you for stopping by and wish you safe travels back home and hope to see you in Germany.
Thank you.
All right, Dirk Freeze, that is the national team leader. They have the development for all the national team programs, and he gets together with his national team coaches. So right now, we do not know yet. It depends if we meet somebody else, if we're going to be bringing somebody back to the show. If not, we will conclude the show and we'll let you know. So this is Pete Caliendo for now, breaking out and outside baseball outside the box. We will talk in a minute. Well, our intention was for it to be the end of the show, but we keep bringing you some awesome stuff here at the ABCA convention in Indianapolis. As I'm walking around, I ran into Coach Ayers again. We sat down, talked baseball development again. Then all of a sudden, Coach Nelson Gort stopped by, former high school coach, head baseball coach at Notre Dame High School in Chicago. And we started talking about pitching and hitting and different areas of development. And as the conversation continued, I thought, why are we not taping this great conversation? Some great development concepts coming out of this. So I turned on the tape recorder. We taped it. Yes, they did not know that we were taping it. I was the only one that knew, so I was able to ask some questions in the meantime. So it was all three of us in a conversation, one that was non-edited. They did give me permission to go ahead and place this awesome, awesome talk on the podcast. You are going to love it. So sit back, relax, listen to an unedited, unannounced taping of three of us talking about baseball development. And we'll be back after you listen to this great, great part of our show.
With you, they're doing it when they're training somewhere, or they're doing it in the summer tournaments.
Which drives me sideways.
But that's like...
Yep, but that's reality.
Everybody agrees that it is crazy. But at the same time, we're not going to escape that, and we're not going to change
or
reverse
that. Yes,
we
are. NCAA is working on it right now.
That showcases...
Do what?
In the winter showcases.
No. Showcases in the offseason.
You got to stop the NCAA Major League Baseball from going to those...
Yeah, but even during the summer, okay, when they go down to Georgia and they're have the scoreboard with the velocity right behind them.
No, but I think what he's saying is, at least in the summer, their arms are in shape.
But they're also not like...
In the winter, they're in no shape.
I understand that, but...
Well, Todd,
the objective of pitching was to pitch, to get the other guy out.
Get him out.
Right?
That's
now, the objective is, how hard can I throw? And they think that how hard I throw, the byproduct is getting him out. It's backwards.
Flip the equation.
Yes.
Yeah, and we have not flipped the equation. Here's my objective. Yeah, get the guy out, number one. Miss bats, number two.
Yeah.
And I could flip those and I wouldn't care.
But
miss bats or get the guy out. Yes. I could say it either way.
But and back to the winter, that is an issue in the winter.
Oh,
these kids are going to showcases and they're not in shape.
Right.
So the only way to reduce that
is to have the NCAA and Major League Baseball not attend those showcases in the winter.
But you're talking about like a small segment of the half a million high school players.
But that's when they hurt their arm, Nelson.
I agree.
That's when they hurt their arm. When they're
at least you're doing something to start with, you know. Start. It's not the, all end, you know, it's not going to take care of it all. But you're right, the velocity, I mean, that's a major thing. You know, and if we just taught velocity with control, I mean, why can't we teach that?
But we're teaching velocity before control.
Right, yeah.
Like, there's no emphasis on...
We should be teaching control first and then building velocity.
Or just, like, fill it up, throw strikes.
Yeah. Well, that's what I...
Because you can teach, if a kid is able to consistently throw strikes, then even if he has a little funk, like, he's consistent in his mechanics.
I like funk.
But... Like, the consistency, the result being consistent says that the process was consistent.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's...
That's correct.
What do you mean by funk?
Funk. He
if
does they, something...
If they have a little...
He has a little dipsy noodle with his arm.
But
if his release point's consistent, what's the big deal?
So then...
He has a strange, kind of a funny leg.
I think that's one of the biggest problems, because who brought it up the other day? You know, the two coaches I was talking to from Chicago, you know, they were saying about, you know, I can't get my guys to throw strikes. And so, well, first of all... Have you developed a consistent release point before you get to any other pitches?
Well, ask that question.
That's the problem with letting young kids throw other pitches too early, right? Because there's no mechanical efficiency, there's no release point consistency, and then they're going to a second pitch, and that's hurting.
But think about that. Like, back when we were growing up, like, the natural evolution of things, okay, well, you could throw strikes,
right?
Okay, which would be just by default the fastball, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, now we need some off speed. So the natural progression, put another finger on the ball. Now we're throwing a changeup, right? If I could throw strikes with this, the emphasis was on reducing velocity to get a hitter out. Now it's the opposite. It's like, well, okay, well, I throw this hard and I can throw strikes. Now in order to get guys out, I need to throw hard.
Right.
And what do you do if your body's not prepared for it, and all of a sudden you try to throw harder?
You break.
It break down.
Yes, and all of a sudden stuff's doing this, and now we've just done everything backwards. Instead of slowing it down to get guys out, we want to speed it up to get guys out.
So how do you teach command?
How you guys know better than I do. I'm with the young kids, I just believe that just like they do in Japan, they let the kids throw, right? Look at their, you know, how their movements. They might make some adjustments in their movement patterns a little bit, you know. Now they just build. What do the old guys do? They just kept throwing until they figured it out, no? I mean, in and out, you know, first down the middle, then can you go in a lot, out a lot? Can you go up and down a lot? Can you go crossways? Keep doing that till, that's why if I had a league, I'd have all fastball league for young kids. I wouldn't have any other league but just fastball. So that way, one, it develops hopefully their mechanics or their movement.
But if you had to keep...
And release.
If you had to teach it, what would you teach to teach throwing? What's the key to throwing strikes mechanically?
I mean, let me ask you. It depends on this may sound weird, it depends on the coach too, because we're going to go back to what I said this morning about volunteers. When you've got a volunteer coach who's only practicing once a week, we're not talking about travel coach, or twice a week, he's got to figure out in a short period of time how to correct these kids, right? So wouldn't you say if you had a 10-year-old and you're playing catch, wouldn't you tell him, try your best to take your head and your eyes towards your target and hope that that corrects the majority of the body?
That? What if he can't? He tries, but he can't. How do you fix that if he doesn't take his head?
Well, that's the issue with, unfortunately, volunteer coaches. They don't have the time like we do to sit there and analyze it and then set up the drills. I'll give you an example on this.
You have an answer to this. I
got an answer to everything I've asked you.
Right.
Mechanically.
I mean, it comes down to balance, doesn't it?
How do you keep your balance?
Well, here's what I did. I had kids, right or wrong, and it worked. I had kids, I would have them stop at their strike position. In other words, I'd have them lift, stop at their strike position, and then see where they're at, right? And then make the changes to correct where they're at, because they're going to be with their head
just
back.
Their tip shoulders.
And then I would have them, then I would have them lift up, come back down, lift up, come back down, get to that position as many times as they can. You know and do it as fast as possible.
And you're doing it without ever even mentioning what you're really doing. What keeps that, why does that work?
I don't know, I do it because it works.
Why does it
work? Balance is the main thing I'm concerned about.
Why?
Core strength.
I was going to say core stability.
No.
Head.
Ready?
Yeah.
his back foot.
What do you mean his back
You're
foot?
You're saying like drag line?
Yeah, drag line.
I couldn't agree more. I didn't think it was that.
Okay, but what
the
do you...
The reason that you keep your head and shoulders, eyes level, shoulder level, mm-hmm. and the old guys did this, but they never knew why. Old guys, if you ever looked at old guy picture, every one of them, if you go back and look at the photographs, every one of them had pitcher toe plates.
Yeah, right. I mean, the old guy, yeah, pitcher toe plates, sure.
We had them in high school. And then some of them had leather up there.
Right, okay. Right. And that got tore all the time.
Correct.
Because they're staying grounded. Just like a rudder.
Why did they have to do that? Because you drag your back foot. What does that do? That it's the rudder of a boat.
Yeah.
Huh. It keeps the boat from flipping over.
Huh.
Okay? So by dragging your back foot and that drill without telling the kids about your back foot,
right.
You're stabilizing the backside foot, i.e. dragging it, if you will, even though it doesn't move much.
Gotcha.
It works.
And I never thought about that.
I
understand the drag line, but
my mind.
So you teach stability by staying grounded with your backside foot. So you drag, and it doesn't matter what the drag does.
As long as it gets back to center.
No, it doesn't have to get back to center.
Really?
Yeah, and I'll show you what the answer is. You got a pen, Pete, handy?
We gotta be careful on time too. We never see anything while we're here.
So there's the rubber. The guy starts center, and that's where most of the kids start with their toes, starts center. They come off and their drag line looks like that, or their drag line does that, right?
Okay, so say it's this guy.
Okay, so it's this guy.
But to me?
So here you go. You go to center. You measure how far center of the rubber is to center. Nolan Ryan said it this way.
I would move this guy over here, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over to the right side.
Back to center. This has to end back to center.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So this guy can't stand here. He's got to start over here someplace.
And that's right. Like, so when I would take him, we'd have a guy out there. On the rare occasion that I would take a mound visit, guy's losing control or something a little bit.
You'd move him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've done that. I've done that in Dominican.
I go, hey, just, and I'll actually draw a line on the rubber.
Yeah.
Just start there.
I just did that in Cuba with a kid. Just what I realized is I said, I couldn't correct that, right? You're not going to correct that, so you got to move him to correct it.
And then you do that and you don't like get into the why. Like, they should already know this, but when they don't, and then you encourage them and like tell them, I guarantee you're going to throw strikes now. Like, the combination of the mental and the physical, all of a sudden they get back to center and it's like, told you so.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And it fixes torn across the body and a lot of other stuff.
Yep. So there's, so we have a kid that played for us that's down with Maneri at LSU now, lefty. And I was asking him, like, how's he looking? He's like, he has control issues from time to time. There's video of him throwing a bullpen and he's totally coming off. I'm like, he just needs to get to the third base side of the rubber.
And line him up.
Because that's it. Because he's so far to first base when he's releasing. I mean, he's the classic this.
Now, the question is, eventually, now, do you correct him so you're not making that adjustment? Do you correct his motor movement
No, this
patterns?
This is like a fingerprint. That stays with
no,
you.
No, what I mean is...
This is a signature line.
I get that part. You moved him over, right?
Yeah, you moved him over on the rubber.
But my point is, can you correct his movement patterns instead of moving him over eventually?
You mean what his foot drag does?
No, his mechanic, what people call mechanics, now they call movement patterns.
Right.
You know, in other words, you're saying he's doing this, he's opening up, whatever. Aren't you going to correct those?
Well,
I think that happens because...
You moved him over?
Yeah, because you're trying to do something, like, when you're separating, you're trying to get back to center, your body's going to do this in order to try to get there, so you're going to lose everything.
So you're saying when you move him over, he's not going to do that?
That's right.
Right, he shouldn't, because he won't feel that...
He doesn't
get around his own body.
So it's the way he perceives it, is what you're saying?
No, like, it's like physically...
But then we're saying we don't have to correct movement patterns.
No, you have to correct improper movement patterns.
Meaning what? Give me some.
Well, changing his posture is what he's really
showing. But that's my point. We've got to still change that, no?
But that happens because he
does no longer has to change his posture to get to where he
can stay stacked.
I got you. Because we moved over.
Right, because he doesn't feel that need then to do this to get back to this position.
Exactly.
by just moving over, he comes here.
See, what's nice
now,
about
I'll
that?
The first
hey, wait, real quick. What's nice about that is because we're always emphasizing high school, college coaches. What's nice about that is that the volunteer coach can make that adjustment if he understands it.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? It's an easy one.
It's an easy one.
And it's quick. That's my point about how we're
especially
training.
Especially outdoors when you have
right.
the advantage of dirt and everything
right.
else.
Instead, because you know what they're trying to do. They're trying to correct his stride while he's pitching. They're trying to correct all kinds of stuff, and that's incorrect.
It makes it worse.
Yeah, it makes it worse.
So the answer to the first question.
It's a glove. You throw strikes by consistency of where the glove was. When you separate equal and opposite,
right.
squeeze, swivel. Swivel
keeping
elbow.
The glove in the front side.
Keep this glove. The closer this glove stays here
yep.
to here, these become
yep.
here and here become vector lines
yep.
to home plate. This changes. You're not going to throw strikes.
Right.
This has got to stay consistent,
right.
just like the gun rifle.
Yeah.
So the key to, for me. Everybody else can do it any way they want. I don't care. But we don't walk people. I know that.
Right.
The key for me is consistency with the glove.
Yeah.
You know, you're on our staff, you walk two guys, you're done.
That's awesome that you say that, because there's a pitching guy that I think is really good. When I go into his academy, he's all over that. Like, he's all over
front side stability.
Going to that, not.
Now, if a kid can't feel that, and a lot of kids don't feel it, and I get that, if you don't realize what you're doing with the glove, so how do you fix it?
No one knows what they're doing in the first place, so you can't fix something you don't understand.
That's right. So how do you fix it?
You got to make them understand what they're doing.
But if he doesn't feel it, what are you going to do? Like, want me to tell you the answer?
Yeah. You overload the front side. You put a
2 pound weight in the front side.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Okay, why? Because
makes
it's so
feel
unnatural.
It. It makes, yeah.
Boom! Oh my God!
Yep.
So it's the same thing, like hitting
exactly
wise.
This guy does puts a weighted ball or something in his hand.
We put a 2 pound weight in their glove,
yeah.
and I make them pitch that way for a week.
Yep.
They hate me.
Yep.
I don't give a shit.
Yep.
I'm old enough. I don't care anymore.
But the same thing with hitting. Why you would, overload a bat? Because kids that have no idea, especially with these bats that are like drop 12 and stuff, kids have no idea where their barrel's at in the zone because they can't feel it. So I always use like the analogy. Well, when you're doing bicep curls, right? Your arms are in here. Heavier the weight, you get tighter in here. You can do light weights out here.
Yeah.
So with a light bat, you can do whatever. So your swing gets long. The heavier the bat gets, your hands have to stay inside.
And your legs have to engage.
Yeah, keep it straight.
And you have to be aware of where that barrel's traveling through the zone.
With a heavier bat.
Yeah, it's not like a strengthening thing like people would think. It's
right.
more just barrel awareness. Now I put a regular bat in your hand.
Becomes easier then.
Yeah,
then it becomes a lot easier. Yeah.
What I like about that too, though, is the heavier the bat, then they start engaging this because of them pulling in their
sure.
body, so their legs start to work.
They got
to
use their whole body.
So if the guy's not using his legs, we can't feel his legs.
Yeah.
Doesn't understand.
Here comes Tom.
That's.
Yes, we are back. Can you believe it? We were going to go off the air, but nope, we are still here at the American Baseball Coaches Convention. Can't stop because we just keep running into great friends and also mentors. And we want to keep asking the question about coaching, because coaching is the foundation of the sport. You've heard it on this show before many times. This is your host, Pete Caliendo. This is my 35th year at the American Baseball Coach Association attending this convention. I'm a believer that you need to be a life learner. I learned that from a lot of mentors of mine. And right now, I've got one mentor right now. I want to say he's the only mentor because I've had several. But he is a 46-year member of the ABCA. He's a Hall of Famer in the American Baseball Coaches Association. And he's also a former national team coach with USA Baseball. We were together in the Pan Am Games. He's in the Illinois High School Hall of Fame. But, I can keep going on. And we'll, right now, we don't have that much time because, as you know, this is a prelude to a one-hour show that we're going to do with every coach that you have listened to on the podcast. So right now, I just want to introduce my good friend and mentor for over close to 35, 40 years. When I was actually playing third base in high school, he was coaching in high school, Terry Ayers. Terry, how you doing, man?
Awesome. Awesome.
And here I get the benefit also rooming with Terry Ayers, and then we have a lot of conversations till late at night. So again, I want to thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure, Pete. Yeah, you're doing a great job for baseball and helping coaches all over the country and the world learning about American's favorite sport, baseball.
And I know you've been all over the world, and you'll be going to, matter of fact, to Vancouver working with coaches. You know, and I didn't mention this about Terry. There's no doubt about it in my mind, when you put him in front of coaches or players, one of the best in the business. Now, you know, there's a lot of great coaches out there, but he's a guy that, you know, and I just said 46 years with the ABCA, he's a guy that will challenge everything you say, and he'll challenge himself on everything that he does to make himself better. So what I want to do is, you know, for our coaches all over the world, tell them what you believe are the attributes of a good coach, because you've been going, you've gone through the hard times where you made the mistakes. Maybe we can make a shortcut for some of these young coaches. They can get better a little quicker.
Number one, you got to be a teacher. Got to break down the fundamentals. Very simple. The younger the kids, the simpler it is, and you've got to do it quick and keep moving in practice. There's nothing worse than a coach letting one kid do something and 14 kids standing there doing nothing. That is the one of the cardinal sins of a coach. You've got to involve all the kids all the time for short duration. In fact, our principle is we go no longer than 6 minutes in any one drill. And I switch it quickly. And I have a lot of drills. Currently, all I teach is the pitchers, but they know. And we do them every single day. I want to encourage the coaches to look up TED Ed, TED Education, and look at the program Effective, Effective Learning, I think it is. And it talks about myelin. Myelin is a substance that wraps itself around the neuron sheaths and your system to learn skills, to complex skills. It's very simple, straightforward. It's a great program, so get on TED Ed, look it up. Effective Practice, that's what I think it's, the name of the program is called. The second thing I want to talk about, quick activities, all the kids involved in, and we forget the most important part, have fun. Have fun, laugh, let the kids laugh. It's a fun game, and we forget that part.
And folks, we said it once, we're going to say it again. You heard it from me. Baseball Outside the Box is not a scripted show. We have no scripts. We follow no plan. We ad-lib. We go off of what the coach's answer is. And now you heard it again. This is another top coach in the world. As soon as we ask them about coaching philosophy and what good attributes are, they all go back to how you run a practice and how you work with the kids. Now, since we're on that, because every coach has gone to that without us even saying anything about practice organization, when you're running a practice, whether it's indoor or outdoors, and kids aren't doing things maybe as well as you want them to, what do you do when you're a young coach?
Well, what I do is stop. We change because there's something wrong with the lesson plan. And what's wrong with the lesson plan? It's you. It's you as the coach. You're supposed to be the leader. You're the guy that's supposed to have the knowledge. You're the guy that has supposed to have the wisdom. So the plan that you laid out may work for you, but if it's not working for the kids, it's not the kids' fault. It's our fault. By the way, that's another big thing that I learned, and it wasn't that many years ago that I learned it. Coaches need to accept responsibility for a bad game in front of your kids. Not too long ago, we're playing a team we should have killed, and our pitchers, and we're pretty good. We had 13 walks in a game. And I was not very happy. So how do you address your kids after they had 13 walks in the game? Here's what I said. Fellas, that's my fault. Obviously, I haven't done a very good job, or we wouldn't have walked 13 guys. Okay? But I can assure you guys, that's never going to happen again. Now what happens? They feel better about it. You don't call anybody out. You accept the responsibility because there's something there that you haven't done as the coach. And I tell you, when that happened, they embraced that relationship with me in a much more positive way than chewing them out.
Mm-hmm.
It does no good. So, but in fact, the less we say, the better off you are.
Terry, you know, you might run a practice. You might be focusing on a defensive thing for a while. Then you get to a game, and that same defensive thing or maybe bunt situation doesn't work out. Where are we failing where we're not taking the practice into a real game situation? How do you deal with, what's the best way to set it up?
That just happened. We lost a summer championship series. We came in third this summer, this past year in Illinois. We failed to execute, a pitcher failed to execute the proper technique to pick up a ball that was stopped in the infield, and he dropped it. Cost us the game, okay, which meant we're not going to be number one in the summer. So whose fault's that? Mine. Why did it happen? I never said a word to the kid. It took me several months. Why did it happen? I know why it happened now. It happened because he's also an outfielder. And when we were working on the drills for the pitchers to pick up the ball correctly and the technique, he wasn't there. Whose fault's that? Not his fault. That's my fault. Okay? And I told him, that's never going to happen again. You've got to learn this technique. And we started in fixing it.
All right, when you look at the overall game, Terry, I mean, it's in some ways it's a complicated game, some ways it's simple, and some ways, but when a young coach is sitting there, and I know this is an hour show, so as far as the answer, it might be an hour show, but give us an idea. When they're sitting there working on a game plan on what they're going to work on in practice, what areas they're going to pick, what are the most important areas to pick on as a team to be able to, you know, control the game better, where do you start? You start with pitching, you start with hitting, because you can't do it all, and some coaches don't have all the time to do all this. Where's your philosophy on where you begin?
Can you play catch? Can you throw the ball to your partner? Can you catch the ball? Can he throw it back? Play catch. The better you can play catch, the better likelihood you're going to win a ball game. So it starts real simple. Guys ask me all the time, what do we do when things go wrong? Go back to the fundamentals. Don't make it tough. Don't make it hard. Don't punish kids. Go back to the fundamentals. They haven't got it yet. It takes a long time. You also have to remember, kids are growing. And as they grow, things change in your body. So I don't think they do things on purpose. It's just the natural growth and progression of the human body, especially younger kids. You know, a kid grows 4, 5, 6 inches in a year. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, how can you expect everything to line up and this kid to be the same kid every day? He's not. So, you know, just go back to the fundamentals and repeat them. We repeat them. We do the core four plus more every day. What are the core four? The four things that our pitchers do every single day, no exception. And then we add to that, and it's automatic. I also have the varsity pitchers teach the fundamentals to the other players. Now, why? Because that's my check on them to see if they really understand and know the concepts and the principles, and can they teach the drills to the younger kids, then I know they know it. If you can teach it, you know it. That's what I do all the time, every year. Doesn't change.
So you could imagine, folks, what an hour show is going to be with Terry Ayers. This is only 7 minutes so far, and there's so much information there. Lastly, Terry, you know, I've been with you a long time. You're pretty emotional at times. You know, times are changing a little bit with players, it seems like. How do you deal with the players who aren't listening sometimes? You know, the discipline aspect, you know, in today's culture.
I don't think we should talk to them right away. Okay? You're upset for whatever reason. They're upset for whatever reason. I think we need to have less talk, more instruction. And I think it needs to come in on a delay. And I think sometimes, Bobby Rowan just said something to me about it. He said, you are the master of sarcasm. And he said to me, if a player doesn't get some sarcasm for you, they feel cheated. I thought, that's an interesting point. Because, you know, I try to humor them when they screw it up, because we all screw it up. So I use humor a lot. I really do. And we try to have a good time and fun. In fact, I know that's true, because the kids, most of the time I sit out in the dugout, and I know the other players like to come out Army, I sit out in the bullpen, not the dugout. I sit out in the bullpen, and the players, position players, like to come out and know what the heck we're doing because we have a great time out there. We have fun. We laugh.
Yeah.
We also do something else that's very different. Between the half innings, we get up off the bench, and we do drills. It may only be for 30 seconds, but we drew pitching drills every half inning, no exception. And why? Because it refreshes the myelin in the system so they can compete the complex physical activity that I'm going to ask them to do quickly when they go in the game.
And I'm glad you answered that because that was going to be my questions. And right now, folks, listen, we're talking think about this. We're talking about a 46-year veteran here at the ABCA. And where do you see Terry Ayers? Where do you see Don Freeman? Where do you see a lot of these guys? You see them in the front row, second row. We see them in every clinic. And then if they don't have a chance to come to the clinic, I guarantee you they're at home watching the videos and analyzing everything that they do. So right now, like I said, this is only 7 to 10 minutes. We're going to have an hour show with each one of these guys. This has been an explosive hour. All right, everybody. That concludes the show from the American Baseball Coaches Association Convention. I know I had a great time interviewing some of my great friends, mentors in the game of baseball. What a fantastic show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you're a new listener and you want to listen to these guys, we're going to be interviewing them 1 hour each in future shows. So all you have to do is to get a free update. Join the show. Go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Click on the iTunes or Stitcher logo. Join, and you will get free updates when the new shows are up. If you're a loyal listener, thank you for a great 2017 season. We have some great things in store for 2018. We continually work hard to bring you some of the best people in the game of baseball when it comes to baseball development and education. So we want to thank you, and we want everybody's help, if possible. If you love the show, give us a rating. You know, go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Give us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. It takes a few minutes, but you know what? It really helps the show. Don't forget, email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox. You can email me whether you like the show or don't like the show. If you want to see some new things on the show, something I should be doing different, you know, when it comes to interviewing people, please, love to get your information, love to get your input. So email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. And now I want to thank all our loyal listeners. You guys have been great. Remember, we are on social media. We're at Twitter, @BaseballOut. We've got a lot of instructional videos and tips. We send them out every time. Interact with us. Do us a favor. Forward that information to all your people on Twitter or also Facebook. Facebook is Baseball Outside the Box. Join us there. The more people we get this information out to about the podcast, the better we believe coaches, players, and parents of all levels, from the grassroots level all the way to professionals, can listen to this show. So help us out if you can. It's just a simple click and forward all our social media to everybody you know. You can also email them our webpage, Baseball Outside the Box. That would help. So again, special thanks to all our guests on the show today. We want to thank everybody for listening. And remember, our guests are Terry Ayers, Bill Olson, Don Freeman. Thanks, guys. Nelson Gord, Bobby Rohn, Dirk Fries from Germany, and Bill Holmberg from Italy. You guys were fantastic. You made a fantastic show. Remember, those are just 5 to 6 minute clips of these guys and some of the information about coaching development. Listen to the 1 hour shows coming up. They will be outstanding. And also, special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer, on the other side of the window with the Lineup Media Group. Remember, this is the non-scripted show, the show that goes off the cuff. We ask questions, listen to the answers, and then get an idea on what we want to ask our listener. So this is a show that interviews the best baseball minds around the world who love to challenge the status quo, who love to give you the new scientific, innovative methods of training young kids. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. We are signing off, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.